Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This week on Rewind, your week in review. The Wisconsin Supreme Court ruled Governor Tony Evers exceeded his authority by issuing repeated mask mandates and public health emergency orders. All Wisconsinites 16 and up will be eligible for the COVID-19 vaccination beginning Monday. And officials are preparing for the sixth round of pandemic-era elections next week as two state superintendent candidates go head-to-head in the only statewide race on the ballots. Rewind, your week in review for April 2nd.
I'm Brianna Riley.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This week, the Wisconsin Supreme Court overturned Governor Tony Evers' emergency health orders. Justices in a 4-3 decision ruled Governor Evers exceeded his authority in issuing the repeated mask mandates and underlying public health emergency declarations tied to the same COVID-19 crisis. Evers, meanwhile, has argued that the pandemic's evolution over the past year has necessitated the successive orders. Justice Brian Hagedorn wrote in a decision for the conservative majority, quote, "The question in this case is not whether the governor acted wisely, it is whether he acted lawfully. We conclude he did not." Meanwhile, for the liberal minority, Justice Ann Walsh Bradley wrote, "It makes no sense to hamstring a governor's ability to meet the emergencies faced by the people of Wisconsin by limiting emergency power to only one underlying cause." This decision jeopardizes some $50 million in monthly food stamp payments for low-income Wisconsinites. That's because Congress tied the issuance of an emergency order with these payments in a bill it passed last year. The state faced this issue before when Republicans were preparing to strike down the mask mandate and the underlying public health order at the end of January. At that time, Republican lawmakers rushed to amend a doomed COVID-19 bill, that bill that was later vetoed by Governor Evers, to give the governor very narrow power to issue public health emergency declarations for the sole purpose of securing this funding. Is there any appetite now, JR, from GOP lawmakers to pass a similar measure so that we can capture these dollars here in Wisconsin?
At first blush, no. I've gotten the impression that the attitude is going to be, look, there's $3.2 billion in federal money coming into the state right now with this package. If you really want to do this, Governor, you can find a way with that money. Two, for the Evers administration, it's a different administration out in Washington, D.C. Before you had the Trump administration, now it's the Biden folks. There's a sense that maybe there'll be more flexibility how the Biden administration qualify for that money. So they're looking for a way to do it. I just don't get the impression that lawmakers, Republican lawmakers, are in a rush to pass another bill to give Governor Evers any kind of powers when it comes to public health emergencies.
Yeah, I think it's worth remembering that at the end of January, when this sort of realization dawned on Republican lawmakers as they were working to pass this resolution, that it would jeopardize this federal funding, there was, you know, a rush to immediately do something to sort of cover their tracks and be able to go ahead and vote it down. But then, of course, the governor was able to still veto the COVID bill and also issue another public health emergency declaration to secure those dollars. That's not an option now, 2 months later. So I wonder if there's potentially, you know, I talked to Senator Assembly Representative Joe Sanfilippo, the chair of the Assembly Health Committee, about this issue this week, and he really deferred to leadership, right? He's like, you know, if leadership decides that this is something we want to do, to pass a narrow bill to give the governor this authority, maybe, but it seems that there is no, like you said, Jared, there's no rush to get this done.
No, and the initial reaction from Republicans has been, look, it's not our fault this money's at jeopardy. The governor could have signed that bill back in February, and if he had, it wouldn't be a problem. But he vetoed it, therefore it's his problem. Now, I don't know how the public's going to view it that way, but it gives you a sense of how they're viewing this, that it's not really their responsibility. The governor had a chance. Now he can figure out a fix on his own.
That's right. Moving on to our next topic, the governor unveiled his initial plan for spending the latest round of federal COVID dollars under the American Rescue Plan. In his plan of the $3.2 billion Wisconsin is poised to receive through the state fiscal recovery fund Act. The governor wants $200 million for infrastructure. That includes expanding broadband, $500 million to continue the state's pandemic response, and the biggest pot of money, $2.5 billion, for economic relief. Now, that includes $50 million for the tourism industry, which has been hit hard by the pandemic, and $600 million for businesses. Evers also this week vetoed a bill from Republican lawmakers that would give themselves a say in how this money is spent. But that didn't stop Assembly Republicans on Tuesday from holding a press conference to issue initial framework for their plan to spend part of the money if they did have a say. That was followed up on Thursday by the release of 11 different bills sort of outlining how Republicans in both chambers want to see this money spent. Biggest takeaway here, $1 billion checks to property owners that would include commercial properties. But as we talked about last week, JR, this money can't be used for tax relief. So it's an open question of whether rebate checks would be allowed anyway under this bill. That all of aside, though, Republicans still don't have any say over this money. Why do you think lawmakers went through this exercise of proposing this framework and then doubling down with these 11 bills later in the week?
To try and put pressure on the governor. Look, the governor said, remember, with the governor's outline of how he would spend the money, he didn't give us many details. It's a pretty vague, $2.5 billion to help communities, businesses, and families. That's a pretty big wide net you're casting there. Part of that is because we don't have final direction from the federal government on what the parameters are for this money. There are still some questions about how it can be spent. The tax question, we don't have guidance from the Treasury Department yet about what that means. There might be some wiggle room there. And oh, by the way, the Republicans who are filing lawsuits nationally over that provision, so that's something to watch. But I've been covering the Capitol for a long time. There's a long-standing tradition of the Friday news dump that if you have bad news, you put it out on a Friday afternoon, especially for a holiday weekend. I've never gotten a package of 11 bills late on a Thursday ahead of a holiday weekend if you really had put some time into it and wanted to really highlight it. It's kind of a weird way to unveil something that seems like a big priority for at least some Republicans. My initial call so far seemed like this is a little bit of a rushed exercise to try and get some parameters down to counter the governor. Republicans right now didn't have an answer for what the governor wanted to do other than this kind of three general proposals from some Republicans, which remember, Senate Republicans were not at that announcement on Tuesday. Democrats have already knocked it because the $1 billion for property owners would benefit homeowners and disproportionately benefit those who are wealthier, because the more your house is worth, the bigger a refund check you would get. Ergo, you usually are a little better off if you have a really nice house, right? So there's some knocks from Democrats about that. The governor's not going to sign these bills. I think they are veto bait. They're trying to get him to veto popular things or put Democrats on record opposing potentially popular programs. Now, there's some stuff in there that maybe they could work on. We don't know because they're so new and so fresh. We're trying to figure out what exactly is the kind of the aim here. Also, some context here. Remember, a week ago, Robin Voss said if the governor vetoed that oversight bill, he would have no choice but to go to court and sue, because he argued that the governor spent this money on his own without legislative oversight was unconstitutional. Fast forward to now, and there's a bunch of softening of that language. Now he's talking about passing legislation first. This seems to be that package of bills he referenced on Tuesday about not going to courts right away, but going to legislation to try and put down a marker. I just don't know if there's going to be any agreement here with the governor or if their priorities match up in the end. Another thing to remember, the broadband money. There's $200 million in governor's budget for broadband. He had $200 million in his package for infrastructure, including broadband. Republicans want $500 million for broadband from the federal money. I asked the news conference of Mark Bourne, the co-chair of finance, what's this mean for the budget provision? And he kind of demurred. What I'm kind of watching is, are Republicans queuing up a way to not do big increases in the budget, even though we have a lot of cash, because they're going to say, well, the federal money should be used for these things. That's something to watch. And with the governor, he's being vague about that $200 million for infrastructure, including broadband, in part because I think he wants to see what Republicans will do with his budget with the broadband provision. And if they don't do all that he wants, he will backfill that with some of the federal money. At least that's first guess right now what the dance is going on with that pot of money.
And I think this is where the timeline really comes into play in this discussion, right? So the state, in order to get this money, had to certify to the Treasury Department, we want it, and we agree that we're going to spend it in the parameters that were outlined in this bill, right? And then after that, that kicks off a 60-day window for Treasury to give us the money. And then there's also this possibility that Treasury could withhold. I think the Legislative Fiscal Bureau memo outlined this last week. Treasury could withhold half the funds and dole those out, you know, up to a year later, right? So there's a question of how quickly can Evers get this money? Will we be well into May? And then how quickly can he get it out the door once he does get it? And also, how does that line up with where we're at in the budget process so Evers can sort of strategically play off of that as we're going forward?
Yeah, Ellie, excellent point. And then another two is, if Republicans had a say in this, would they try and delay getting some money out because there's an election coming up, another like 17 months, something like that. So there might be a new governor that they would want to have a shot to spend some of this money. So there's a lot of things at play here, I think, in this whole dance about this money.
Yep, lots of moving parts, and we'll see if that lawsuit actually does come down. Well, we're moving on now to our COVID update. All Wisconsinites 16 and older will be eligible for the vaccine starting on Monday. The new phase will begin 2 weeks after individuals with chronic health conditions were made eligible to receive the shots. Health officials cited reliable vaccine supply estimates and the progress made in vaccinating previous categories and moving up the next eligibility group. The announcement came as President Biden this week said 90% of adults in the U.S. would be eligible for the COVID-19 vaccines by mid-April. More than 1 million Wisconsinites are now fully vaccinated against COVID-19, a milestone we hit earlier this week. Also this week at the national level, there's been lots of attention paid to these so-called vaccine passports, or these credentials that individuals could present to various businesses or travel agencies or, you know, whatever, to gain access to certain services to prove that they are fully vaccinated against COVID-19. And this is obviously a discussion more broadly, too, as things begin to start fully reopening everywhere. Assembly Republicans and Senate Republicans in Wisconsin this week latched on to this idea in three different bill proposals that were unveiled on Thursday and circulated for co-sponsorships, seeking to ban the use of these vaccination passports. As the state reaches this place where officials are envisioning, you know, post-pandemic life, JR, do you expect to see more of these showdowns or these lines in the sand over certain issues?
Oh, absolutely. There's a confluence of factors going on here. One, remember, there was a contingent of the Republican base that was quite unhappy that GOP lawmakers didn't confront Evers with the mask mandate for all of 2020. There was definitely some chafing there that there was not a vote after he issued the first one, late July, early August, renewed it in the fall. They didn't take any action until February. So there's a Republican contingent that wants to make sure they tell the base, we are fighting for you guys, we hear you, we're sensitive to your perspective on this. Two, you have conservative media really pushing this idea of the vaccine passports and that this is, you know, something nefarious going on. And then, you know, we have also people who just don't trust the government in general and are wary of this. Now, the Biden administration has said that it is not going to issue these passports. These are from private businesses. However, it will work with them to develop what this might look like. But still, you're definitely going to see a pushback from Republicans over this issue because of the confluence of factors. Now, the question that I have is kind of, where's the governor at on this, right? And Democrats in general. And two, the business community, what are they looking for? Like, what do they want out of this? And like, let's say, you know, I go to Packer games. You know, what do the Green Bay Packers want in terms of packing the stadium this fall? Are there going to be requirements? I mean, just because we're getting vaccinated, the pandemic is not over. We're going to hit a wall at some point where we're getting a great job right now as a state of getting shots in arms. There are people who don't want to get the vaccine for various reasons. They don't trust it. They don't think they need it, et cetera. So we're going to hit a point where we probably are not going to reach 80% for being the population being vaccinated. That's where herd immunity kind of kicks in. So then what? What do we do? It's going to be an interesting and a tricky topic for the business community in Wisconsin and nationally to figure out how it operates post, you know, once we kind of get back to quote-unquote normal.
And the other factor, I think, sort of feeding into this is, when will kids under the age of 16 be eligible for the COVID-19 vaccine, right? I think the last thing I heard was fall. So in the interim then, how do you, you know, bolster parents' confidence that schools are safe? Do you roll out more robust testing for COVID-19 in schools? How do you ensure teacher confidence as well? I mean, this reopening and return to normalcy process will, you know, go past the summer months, and I'm not sure if there's that level of realization yet from the folks like that are starting to feel some optimism about all of this.
Yeah, well, what do schools do? Do they say you have to have a vaccine or be masked up, you know, come fall? Like, what are they going to require it? I have two boys. They had to be vaccinated before they went to school for various diseases, right? So we're going to add COVID-19 to the list of things you have to get vaccinated before you can go back to school. That's going to be something to watch as we kind of, again, get back to either normal or really the new normal going forward.
Yep. Now let's hear from Department of Health Services Deputy Secretary Julie Williams-Van Dyke, who talks about the next vaccination phase in the COVID briefing this week.
Opening it up to everybody doesn't mean that providers can't continue to prioritize people with chronic conditions. And so, especially in our healthcare system, where they have relationships with these patients and they have data about these patients, I fully expect that healthcare providers will continue to prioritize people with chronic conditions first. And that's the beauty of our system here in Wisconsin. We have many doses going to healthcare. We have doses from the federal government going to pharmacies that can be disseminated more generally throughout the population. And so there's a system for everybody here.
UW system officials this week lobbied for more state support before a Senate Informational Committee hearing, a precursor to the Joint Finance Committee agency briefings we'll be hearing from next week. Citing a projected budget hole of $170 million, UW system president Tommy Thompson said incoming federal dollars alone wouldn't be enough to cover that. And he noted many campuses still have furloughs and travel restrictions in place, while others have laid off employees as needed. Evers budget seeks a $190 million increase in the UW system over the next 2 years. Now, observers say they don't expect that to be fulfilled. They're, you know, expecting maybe $100 million less, if not a further reduction in the budget that Republican lawmakers put forth. This hearing, though, was a precursor, as I mentioned, to the Joint Finance Committee's four planned agency briefings next week. UW System is not among the agencies that were invited to testify. The invited agencies were the Department of Public Instruction, Workforce Development, Natural Resources, and the Public Service Commission. So, JR, this informational hearing was essentially Thompson's UW budget pitch, right? But we're getting the real deal next week with official agency briefings. How do these four compare to the number of Joint Finance Committee held agency briefings in past budget cycles?
Well, it was 2 years ago. I got information a couple of years ago from the co-chair offices that if you went back to, I think, the 2005-ish budget through the one previous, two budgets ago, they were usually between 16 and 21 agency heads came in and testified. But this is the new reality with Democratic Governor Tony Evers and a GOP-led legislature. 2 years ago, one of the first acts of the Joint Finance Committee was to take most of what governors put in that budget that they considered policy and stripped it out in one fell swoop, including the Medicaid expansion that he wanted to do. The bet is that something's going to happen this time around, and the fact that they're tailoring down how people are hearing from is a sign that they're not really going to work off of the governor's budget a lot of ways, and I get the impression they're using these guys to kind of highlight some of these policy differences. And I would bet you money that when DWD is up, they're going to talk about the unemployment insurance program and the problems that they had, and it's going to be an exercise in trying to highlight what they think are issues with the Evers administration and how it's approached things.
Do you have any insight into how these four were chosen? I mean, natural resources is of interest to me in the sense of what are these water quality measures going to look like? There was all that drama 2 years ago over extending the NOAA stewardship fund with, you know, Tom Tiffany now in Congress. Perhaps there's less opposition to a 10-year extension this time around. I mean, what are you watching for, and why were these agencies the ones that were chosen, do you think?
Well, again, DWD, I think, comes down to unemployment insurance and that problem there. Public instruction, it's a $1.6 billion funding increase that Evers proposed. There's also $1.5 billion in federal money coming to school districts starting with this latest COVID package. That's on top of money they've already received. You know, what I've picked up from talking to lawmakers is Republicans are trying to figure out, how does this federal money fit in with the budget, state budget? Is there a way to not spend state dollars and use federal money instead? How can they craft, for example, school aids? Typically, you know, there are various pots of money for school aids. One's based off of a formula that uses property values in your district. Reward, basically, districts that are poor get more state money and rely less on property taxes. There's a pot of money called categorical aids, and you can craft it any way you want to. That basically, there's one that everybody gets the same amount of money per student, no matter what, how wealthy your district is or how poor it is. Republicans are wondering, can they do a categorical aid that would maybe reward school districts that were in person, for example, and not those that were teaching virtually? The challenge, though, is that Governor Evers has a pretty wide, pretty powerful veto pen. He can rewrite things. If they try and do a categorical aid for in-person instruction, he could possibly rewrite that and turn the tables on them. So it's a little bit of a difficult path to go forward. And looking at the budget big picture, you know, we still don't know if the Senate and the Assembly, Republican caucus, get on the same page on big ticket items and hammer something out. And then two, can they do something that Evers would be happy to sign, that he'd be happy to sign after he worked as a veto pen, or that he might actually veto? Because the reality is, Republicans aren't going to do what Governor wants them to do, but if Governor doesn't like what they do and can't rework it to his satisfaction and vetoes it, they're not going to do something more to his liking going forward. There's already a sense from some Republicans I talked to that they'd be content to let the budget stay as is. They feel like the state's spending enough money as it is, and there's all this federal money coming in. Why spend more? So it's a dynamic to watch as this kind of plays out this summer at some point.
Yeah, and bringing us back to the UW system and the federal funding coming in there through ARPA, the latest COVID relief package, they're set to get some $275 million, but at least the UW system institutions are. But it's important to remember, as higher education advocates will repeatedly remind you if you ask them, that half of that money has to go to emergency aid for students. So how much money are these institutions, these schools really seeing from the federal government? And that's sort of part of what Tommy Thompson was getting at during his informational briefing this week. Let's get back to that, actually. Let's hear from the UW system president as he makes his case for increased federal support in the next budget.
Through the end of the spring 2021 semester, UW institutions have incurred $640 million. I want to repeat that. $640 million in COVID-related costs and lost revenue. Of the total federal funding provided, about 45%. So I know that was a question. 45%. Or $232 million is being passed directly to students. We received $54 million in CARES funding through the state of Wisconsin Department of Administration to support our fall testing and COVID-related costs. But we are still left with an estimated, still left after all this, an estimated net loss through the spring semester of almost $170 million. As I stated earlier, I make no apologies for our ambitious request. For our operating budget, we are requesting $95.7 million increase over the biennium.
Wisconsin is preparing for its sixth pandemic-era election on Tuesday. The only statewide race on the ballots is the head of the Department of Public Instruction. There are two candidates in that race, former Brown Deer Superintendent Deb Kerr and Pecatonica Superintendent Jill Underley. The latest fundraising reports show Democratic-backed Underley outraised Kerr nearly 16-1 in the pre-election period. The April 6 ballots also include elections for the 13th Senate District, the 89th Assembly District, and the Appeals Court. Polls are open Tuesday statewide from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Let's focus on the DPI race in this discussion. Some themes we've seen emerge so far, you know, lots of discussions about school choice, in-person learning, COVID recovery. JR, what has stood out to you, and how do these fundraising reports, these figures showing Underley outpacing Kerr, factor into your assessment of the race?
Oh, I mean, one thing that stands out is that the Democratic Party of Wisconsin is investing heavily in Jill Underley. They're nearing in on $1 million invested in her campaign post-primary. You don't often see a political party in Wisconsin put that kind of money in the DPI race. And one thing I'm kind of picking up is that there's one, you know, the Democratic Party under Ben Wickler, state chair, has become just a fundraising machine. It's really amazing how much money that party's been able to bring in. And they're willing to invest it in races like this where before the party's really involved. Two, think about 2022. If you're Ben Wickler, you don't want to lose a DPI race If you're trying to convince people that you can run an efficient and effective campaign with a governor's race on the ballot, a U.S. Senate race on the ballot next year, post-redistricting, how those seats are going to look. I mean, you want to convince people that you've got a good operation going. You're not going to slip up and lose this one, something like this. So it really stood out to me was just the amount of money coming from the state party, because the candidates on their own aren't raising great money and aren't getting a ton of attention. But Underly is getting an advantage because the groups that are helping her, that are allowing her to get up on the air, because, I mean, looking at the reports, she spent way more on TV than Deb Kerr has, and she's able to do that because of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm. Let's hear now from the two candidates during an online forum hosted by WisPolitics.com and the Milwaukee Press Club from Thursday.
The state superintendent oversees all of the children in Wisconsin. And so if we are focused on equity and excellence, we can't deny any child that opportunity. And so what I want to do is I want to bring stakeholders to the table and say, what does a high quality education look like in the state of Wisconsin? What does accountability mean? I support the liberty of parents to choose where they want to send their kids, under what circumstances. And so a lot of our Black and brown parents, especially in Milwaukee, when they haven't had a good choice of a public school or open enrollment, have decided to use these vouchers or go on to school choice program. We need to make sure that all kids have an access to a high quality education.
I'm the only candidate running a school district right now during the pandemic, and I see firsthand how hard hit our schools are, and our kids are hit by these funding shortfalls. We see it every time there's an election by the number of referendum, for example, that are on the ballot. So we should be investing our taxpayer dollars in our public schools so that we can continue to invest in things that increase opportunities for kids, you know, like technology, smaller class sizes. And our public schools are struggling and assuming these costs, especially during this pandemic. So in the long term, we can't afford two systems of education in Wisconsin. We can't. And so we need to make sure that every child has access to a quality education in a public school.
All right, on to stock picks now. What's rising this week, JR?
Appeals court money. Usually appeals court races are kind of sleepy affairs, but looking at the Second District Court of Appeals, which is based in Waukesha, Shelley Grogan raised about $240,000 in the pre-election period, which is pretty good money. And she actually had a lot of kind of like well-known Republican donors in her mix. But then the incumbent, Judge Davis, put $400,000 of his own money into the race. I mean, that's like almost unheard of money for an appeals court race. And what's interesting here is that Davis was appointed to the bench by Governor Tony Evers. Even though he's kind of like got some Republican ties, his family's kind of known as Republicans. But Grogan's attacking him as like this liberal, Milwaukee liberal who was appointed by Tony Evers. You can't trust him. Grogan also has help from the Wisconsin Alliance for Reform. A conservative group is doing six figures of TV in that race, bashing Davis. The Republican State Leadership Committee, through its Judicial Fairness Initiative, is also doing like $56,000 of cable backing Grogan. So it's an unusual amount of money spent on an appeals court race, period, in Wisconsin. This is a little more interesting because there's the Evers angle there. And what I'm wondering is, Grogan got in kind of late. Has she done enough to burn in a conservative leading district that she's the obvious Republican candidate? And for Davis, has he done enough, because he's the incumbent, which often gives you certain advantages, can you sit together Democrats who are going to see Grogan's ads and go, well, she's obviously not for me, independents, and some Republicans who are more moderate and might back him, can you sit those folks together? It's been a more traditional, like, experience-based campaign and pull off the win.
What's mixed?
Brian Hagedorn, it's interesting. He authored the opinion by the Supreme Court that overturned Governor Evers' public health emergencies, that was the foundation for his mask mandate. Remember, Hagedorn broke with conservative colleagues on a number of high-profile cases in the last year, including President Trump's lawsuit trying to overturn the November elections in Wisconsin. And I asked some conservatives, you know, because Hagedorn was out on the outs a bit with the grassroots base, is this a reprieve or redemption? And their word was basically reprieve. It's not necessarily going to win over. Some people are still unhappy with Hagedorn, but it might kind of remind them, okay, he's on our side sometimes. The question is going forward, like, where is he going to be on some big issues? Because there's still some more cases coming down the pipe for the court. For example, they're going to second kick at the cat with this question about guidance from the Elections Commission about filling in missing information absentee ballots. That case is pending for the court right now to ask to take original action on that lawsuit. So there's some big items yet to come that might help him kind of get back on the quote-unquote right side of the issue with the conservative base.
And falling.
Deb Kerr, we kind of talked about it a little bit before, but really what's striking about Kerr's fundraising is, one, how little of it there is, and two, that, you know, Hagedorn is the example that conservatives have used all spring with this DPI race. In 2019, Hagedorn was outraised by Lisa Neubauer. There's a sense that he was in a pretty much an uphill battle, but he caught late fire. Like, there was enthusiasm for him among the conservative base. They got excited. He got some late help from outside groups and rode that to the upside win. And that was the template for Kerr, a lot of people. You know, she's going to get people excited. In the end, there'd be a path. One, we're not seeing the money come in. We're not seeing groups really go to bat for her the way they are for going for Underly. And her fundraising shows she's not generating excitement among conservative donors. And part of the reason is, how do you excite conservatives who are your ticket to possibly winning when you are a Democrat who says you'd vote for Joe Biden last fall? Now, we're seeing signs of her making more appeals to conservatives. There's the school choice issue, for example. In that forum on Thursday, she talked about this bill that would ban transgender students from participating in girls' sports. She got behind that. So there are signs she's trying to get conservatives fired up. I just don't get the impression it's enough. It's a little too late. So, you know, never say never in politics, but if she wins on Tuesday, it would be a massive, and I mean massive, upset.
Yep, we are not making election predictions on this platform. But thank you, JR, for getting into all of that. And thank you, everyone, for tuning in. I'm Brianna Riley.
And I'm JR Ross.
And that's Rewind for April 2nd.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.